Tina from Circle Care Services, and thank you for listening to My BCBA Life. Circle Care Services is not just an ABA therapy agency. We focus so much on giving our BCBAs and really all BCBAs around the world the support and community you're looking for. With this podcast, you're not on your own anymore. You're part of a BCBA community committed to making this world a better place to BCBA. Once this episode is complete, you'll be able to obtain a free CEU certificate for the clinical topic discussed. There is a link in the show notes of a form that will ask you for your information that we need to generate your CEU certificate. In order to acquire it, you'll need to confirm your attendance and that you listened to the entire episode. As such, throughout the episode, I will drop three surprise words that you'll have to take note of to fill out in the form. Thank you, and let's get started. Welcome, Marissa Lynn, to My BCBA Life. Super excited to have you here, hear about you and how you BCBA. So if you can share with our listeners who you are, and we can jump right in.
I've been in the field for 10 years and a BCBA for 8. Unlike others, I had no idea what ABA was when I went into my master's program. I was tricked. I thought it was Criminal Minds type of information. Nowhere did it say children with autism in the description. And so I joined in and I was very far behind compared to my classmates who like all knew about what ABA was. But I fell in love with the field working with kids, and I felt like I had a very unique experience because it was the first ever in-person program at ASU. So like they trained us how to be BCBAs from the beginning. And then from there, I went to California, worked in Arizona, Texas, Georgia, and New Mexico. And I have experience from some school, clinic, home, and telehealth.
Wow. And you traveled a lot. I think the listeners would enjoy hearing your background a little bit in your personal life of why you travel so often and where that all takes you.
Gotcha. So my husband's in the military, and when we were done with school at ASU, we went to California, and he's like, we can't afford California. So he joined the military, and with that, we got to move around. And our next big journey is going to be going to Italy, which actually, although that's exciting, it's a little bit of a barrier because there's not telehealth opportunities in Italy to America. The military just recently changed the law in 2023, saying that we can, but companies haven't, I don't know, there's still a barrier. So that might be my next task, is to see if I can work with laws or anything to help with that situation.
Wow, that is a journey. And like you said, never ending journey, because you are still moving. I'm just curious, have you found with the different states you've been in that the way you were either working with the children, families, your RBTs, has it been very different within each state, or you found a lot of similarities? I'm curious if there was like, we're in the same country, but still, I don't know. I feel like,
you know, it's definitely different working with the different states. And I don't know if it's necessarily the state or the clinics, because like each company trains their RBTs differently and have a different structure and how to provide services. I will say with one company I was at, I worked with them on two different states. And I will say it is, for that experience, it was different by state. So for example, in California, writing treatment plans, they would say like, you can do these things. And then working in Texas, it's like, hey, we can't word things this way, or we can't target these certain goals. And then the RBTs themselves and the student analysts, which is a term I use for those who are going to become a BCBA, and getting their hours. They're definitely different state by state. Without trying to go into specifics, like maybe because my experience is in California a lot, is a lot of them have a lot more training and a lot more access to a wide variety of clients compared to New Mexico. It is a more of a poverty state, so it's low income and we have very limited resources. And so it's harder to give the access to the clients and the resources to the RBTs. A lot of them are more remote and don't have that one-on-one experience or have access to a clinic to watch other people and how they implement ABA.
That's very interesting because I know even also we provide services in different states, and I find just like speaking to not even the eight like people who are doing ABA, but different doctors, I'm like, oh, like I know when I call them, they're going to sound like this and have more time, and it's like all the same country, but how they you do see a difference in your relations there.
Well, just like with you, like to me, you have an accent and it's probably not an
I
accent to you.
have an accent.
Yes.
What? What's my accent?
Well, it sounds like New Jersey type of accent.
Right. I didn't even know I have an accent. No one ever told me that. That's really funny. Actually, I'm from New York, but New York and New Jersey
Okay,
are very similar.
East Coast.
Yeah, I thought we talked the same.
It's like a little bit like if your R's are like kind of dropped here and there.
That is so funny. Okay, I'm gonna be conscious of it now.
Don't be.
I know. Okay, so I love you kind of already introduced us to the topic that we're talking about. You call your students, the RBTs that work under you, student analysts. So I want to get into that because I know you're very passionate about student analysts and your role towards them. So if you could let's just take a step back and talk about, as a BCBA, we're working with kids, you're working with the moms, you're working with all sorts of people on the team, but the student analysts and the RBTs who work under you are a huge asset to the team. They're the ones working with the kids. And I'm curious to hear what you have to say about that relationship and what's important about that.
They're the heart of the operation. They're the ones, with the kids every single day. And I feel like it's my job to support them, to help them out. If they don't feel supported, if they don't feel like they are getting the help that they need, then ABA is going to fail, and the client themselves is, ultimately going to pay the price for it. So I believe it's important to help them out as much as possible, and not just with ABA, because I notice my RBTs do better if I talk to them as people, and instead of just like, hey, do XYZ, it's like, let's talk to you about a person. Do you even want to be an ABA? Is this your goal for the rest of your life? Or what is your passion? And talking to them as, we're human beings. What is it that drives you and motivates you in order to help you succeed, and then the client will succeed?
My first surprise word is pen. You mentioned like subtly that you talk to them as people and you hear like about them. And I think that's so important because you're just coming in and to understand who's part of your team and to really get to know them as a person. Why, like, could you elaborate on that more of why it's so important to really know the RBT as a person and not just as like a, this is, as a handover of the goals?
It's just like with our clients, like with our parents or anyone else in the clinical team, we want to build that rapport, and then that way it helps build that trust. If they can trust me, then they're going to trust the things that I'm going to tell them clinically. I've seen it where there's sometimes no trust between the RBTs and the BCBAs, and so they won't implement things 100% or accordingly, or they're going to try things off script because they think this way might be better. And instead, let's work together as a team. You trust me, let me trust you a little bit. Maybe you have some experience that I don't know about, and let me see what you want to try. And let's try it together, see if it works, and then let's bounce ideas back off of each other. I like the team approach more than like just do what I say and things will work out the way I tell you to, because that's not how ABA works. We know things are going to have a curveball somewhere.
Exactly. I love the example you gave of specifically implementing a plan either well or like going off script and like the trust, the dual trust that it comes from you trusting her. Once she goes up, oh, why did you do that? Instead of being like, hey, you didn't follow my plan now, I'm curious if you could like break that up a little bit because you seem to be like very naturally in tune to other people, very easy to talk to. And some BCBAs are more clinical focused and have less of that natural skill. I'm curious if you could like talk, because it is a skill, even though for you it seems like it does come naturally, of how do you know?
No.
Okay, that's cool. Talk to me and tell me, what do you do to bring out that trust and that rapport with your RBTs?
Okay, so first, it's not a skill I had. I was very
Okay.
clinical. I was very cold. Well, I don't want to say cold-hearted, but I was just like, I'm a robot where everything's black and white type of thing. I think it was just, I did a lot of listening, and the more I listened, the more I realized, okay, you talk to them, make them human, and make yourself human. Show that it's okay to make mistakes. And that helped build the trust. Like, oh yeah, I did make a mistake. I'm sorry. Let me fix that. Showing them that you own it, helped open up some RBTs I've worked with. To help build that trust and rapport, sometimes just a simple like, hello, how are you doing? How was your day? And then remembering little facts about themselves. And I know that sounds duh, that's what we should be doing, but honestly, I didn't know that when I first started in this field. So I used to have a notebook because I had 30 clients, which would have, one to two RBTs each minimum, and then, their speech therapist, their parents. So I used to have to like, without violating HIPAA, like write little code names and like here are some facts about them so I can start memorizing. Okay, with this RBT, this person really likes to eat ice cream on the weekend, or this RBT just went to a concert. This one just had a grandfather pass away. And so just like providing them, hey, how's your day going? How can I help you? Do you need anything? Do you need a bathroom break? Because sometimes they don't even be given bathroom breaks, just giving them just. I know it sounds basic, but I feel like that does make a huge difference in the long run.
Wow, you said like, oh yeah, it seems so basic. It's so not basic. And I love how you have a notebook, and I want to like point that out because that's such a good takeaway of a notebook. And I can't believe you had 30 clients. That's a lot.
Yeah, so that was when I was a brand new BCBA and I didn't know how to say no. And they're like, you have to do 30
That's
billable hours. And
crazy. 30? I never heard of such a thing.
yes, and so that was when I was first a BCBA, and then when I went to New Mexico, they kept trying to give. I had 32 at one point. Yes, and then I
No,
got pregnant. I
not
went on
possible.
maternity leave, and I came back. I'm like, I'm only going to have four clients, and guess what? I can build 20 to 30 hours with four clients.
Yeah, 30. That is, I never heard of such a thing. I heard like 10, like people who work 40 hours, 10 to 12. And like, that means like they're not full day cases because that's 30. I never ever
It
heard
was
of.
a lot. It was a lot. I like got to see RBTs like once a month when I first started. I didn't know who they were, and then a lot of it was like BC ABAs had cases, so I had to supervise them once a month. I was
That's
losing my mind.
crazy.
I had no
Yeah,
idea what
that's
was going on.
No. So I guess like your solution was just okay, I need a notebook to keep track. But even with 10 clients or four clients, and say you have one to two RBTs within each caseload, I still love that idea because then you really like when you like walk into the door and you're coming from either your personal life and there's a lot going on and you're walking into a whole new world, you want to like really be present just to like look at that notebook and say like, oh right, like you mentioned her grandfather either had a birthday party or had a funeral or and then you could like, hey, how was it last weekend with your family? And like, oh wow, you remember? Like I could imagine what that does to like set the tone of a starting a case like with this schedule.
Just showing that you can care. That's what I want to let them know. I care about you. I care about what's going on in your life. And I'm here for you. I might not always be here for you because sometimes I have things going on in my life, but I think
Right.
telling them that too, I like to be as transparent as possible so that they know what's going on and they can trust on me. And just two-way communication, as much communication as possible.
Love that. So that was like I'm like taking that all in because I love how you really like communication. That's like a big one. Everyone says, okay, if you want to have a relationship, obviously you have to have communication. But your tips of really remembering, recording, following up, and obviously it has to be real, like the actual care, like you said, like even when you aren't able to show that you care through either interactions or I don't know because you have a lot going on. When you care, it feels. They feel it. It's a wireless connection, someone once told me. When you actually care about something, like people feel it could be across the world and it could be, you know, when you're not with them because you couldn't show up that session, but they know that you're behind them and that you're interested in knowing more. So all that is so important. And I know that you talk a lot about you're passionate about the soft skills versus the clinical. I know that there is a balance. And I'm curious to hear your take on that because we mentioned it once before where when behavior analysts are going to schools, what are they walking out with versus what will they really need to use in their sessions? So if you could take us away with that.
No problem. So this reflects back on two different supervisors I had when I was in grad school. When I was
Okay.
in grad school, I told you I had like no idea what ABA was, and I felt like I was falling behind. And I had this one supervisor who took her time every week and spent an hour with me just going over clinical skills. This is what reinforcement is. This is what, punishment is. And she just answered every single one of my questions, and I loved that. By the time I went to third semester, I had a supervisor who's like, here you go. Here's your caseload. Or not like a caseload, but like, what do you want to learn? How do you want to be a BCBA? And so I kind of took that with me when I got into the field, and it took a few years to like, find my footing on, hey, we come out of, grad school, we come out of the BCBA test, knowing the clinical skills, but no one really taught us these soft skills on how to talk to other people, how to supervise other people. Even though that's part of the checklist to supervise others, companies don't give us chances or opportunities really to do that. Some companies do, some companies don't. So whenever I get student analysts, I like to talk to them about like, hey, I know you know the clinical skills, but what is it? What type of supervisor do you want to be at the end of the day? What, think about all the supervisors you've ever had. What are some good traits? What are some bad traits? And which ones do you want to take with you when you become a supervisor? Do you know how to implement an assessment? Do you know how to talk to parents and have parent trainings? All of those I feel like are on like the lower end every time I meet new BCBAs or who are student analysts, and they just don't have those opportunities with those skills. I recently just met a BCBA who I had a trainer on how to do initial assessments because she just didn't have any opportunities during her 2000 hours to do that.
Right. That's very common. I know what, like, because we recognize that we actually have a very serious training for the BCBAs who are on staff to go through that training. And it's they have a clinical director. So, like you said, like you had to sit with a BCBA to say, like, this is how you do the initial assessment. So important. And, you know, like all these small things, like you said, like, okay, that's a clinical aspect of what you don't actually like. It's what you're really talking about is what you learn versus what you're actually doing. And it's very hard to like sit in a class. I don't think anyone gets it of like when a parent has a question, here's how you respond, or when a parent does not feel comfortable with you or this concept, but they were like kind of forced into getting ABA for their kids because they were told this is the only thing. My second surprise word is jar. How do you calm them down and what kind of things will do you tell them? You don't get that. And really what you hope to have is BCBAs who do inspire you, where you say like, I want to be like that. I want to I notice how she spoke to others and that's where I and that's and like tap into that and then follow through with that. What if I don't have a BCBA who inspires me, who has the soft skills we're talking about? What do you recommend?
Oh, that's a tough one. Okay, so there's lots of different avenues, of course. Like you can try to go online and see if there's a BCBA across the country that might be able to help you with those soft skills, books. Or even on, if you have those BCBAs who are bad, what they're not doing and what would you do instead? That way you can just like, and it's, you know how we write behavior plans and we have to put in our behavior plans, what doesn't count as an example? Well, you can use those BCBAs as non-example, as examples of what not to do. But honestly, it's like just being human and passionate and, having that compassion at the end of the day, especially with the parents who are going through a lot. Some of my training, I remember this one training who's like, hey, you have this parent that's coming up to you and is like crying their eyes out because they're going through a divorce and their second kid just got diagnosed with autism. And the training literally said, I'm sorry for that's going on, but we need to focus on your kid. And it was the like most strangest training I've ever seen because that's not how it works and the parent's not going to trust you. So
No.
it's just, having that compassion, having that listening ear, and it's okay. In my opinion, it's okay to deviate a little bit away from the clinical and just, be there for somebody and just listen to them.
Absolutely. Wow. I I love what you just said. I can't believe that happens. That actually happened. That's like a little shocking, unfortunately. But like you said, of even if you don't have that BCBA who's like, ooh, the picture perfect, that's what I want to be, by listening to BCBAs like yourself and really just being aware. I feel like that's something you kind of said, where just being aware of like and putting yourself in their shoes of this is what she told me. Okay, so what is the proper response to make her calm down? Like the real idea is, and like you said, just be compassionate and tap into the mom, into the child, to really be there for them as people and see them not just for the clinical. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So is there any other interaction? I think like we highlighted a lot of the BCBAs with the RBT, and we spoke a lot about that. We spoke about a little bit even the RBT and the BCBA. And could we just talk a little bit more about either the clients or even we tapped a little bit into the parents? Is there anything else you want to say about any specific of the interactions? Like I thought we were like really going to focus on the RBTs, but and the student analysts, like you like to call them. But really, there's so much more. Is there anything else you want to share about any of the interactions that we have?
I have a lot I could share. I can go on for a long time. but I would say, like, definitely trusting n not just your team, but those outside your team. So I made a lot of mistakes, especially when I was a young BCBA. I feel like a lot of us young BCBAs would come in and be like, I know everything, and have that arrogant pride because we just passed and we feel like we're on top of the world. One of my best friends in the field, she was a BCABA and I was a BCBA. And I had this client who was engaging in maladaptive behaviors. And this RBT told me that my best friend, who wasn't my best friend at the time, told her to do something else. And I got all mad and I didn't even listen to her experience, like what happened. I just went up to her and, like, hey, don't do this with my client ever again. And which was completely wrong of me. And she put me in my place. She's like, this is what happened. You need to ask me about my perspective and why I intervened the way I did. And I was like, wow, okay, you're actually right. So I've learned, instead of just assuming things, ask questions, ask why were, somebody did the thing they did before you react.
Love that. Good for her that she stood up, and good for you that you respond like you took it. You said, okay, got it. You're right.
Yes, like I said, I it's okay to make mistakes. Let's learn from the mistakes so we can do better next time. This field's about, getting feedback and improving, so why
And
not?
trial error, honestly, of like
Yes.
what's working, what's not working. And I actually once spoke to someone who said like what she implemented with one client, she was like trying so hard to like make something work, and finally it worked. She was so ecstatic. She like took that program and said like, perfect, I'm going to use it for all my clients. And she like used it like the next day, like very excited. Like she had to like prepare for it, and she got the materials, and she went in, and it went like whoop right down. And she's like, not gonna work. Like you said, like really seeing like where is this person at? Is it going? And even a program that works for the client that doesn't work, it's not the RBT style, is going to have to be tweaked in order for it to really be done properly
Exactly.
and in a comfortable way.
Exactly, because like just like our clients, RBTs are individuals. The way that we have shy ones, we have outgoing ones, and it's finding programs that work with them too. So whenever I work with a client, and let's say I have two clients who need to work on the same skills, but their RBTs are completely different, I'm going to write them a little bit differently, so that way it works best for the RBT that's going to help the client the best.
Love that. My third surprise word is cover. And I want to like end with like a topic that I think is important is as a BCBA, and we talked a lot about as the behavior analyst looking at other BCBAs and seeing what's right, but you are the BCBA. How do you recommend the best way to give feedback to your student analysts to like be proactive and not just obviously how you do it, they're seeing, they're watching you, be that role model for them. But how do you give feedback? How do you recommend that?
So I like to do at the beginning of everybody brand new that comes into my caseload is ask them at the very beginning of session, how do you like feedback? Do you like it in the moment? Do you like it after? Do you like it written? Because everybody likes feedback a little bit differently. And then tailor my session like that. And then as I get to know the person throughout the sessions, my overlaps, my supervisions, tailor it to adjust to how they're reacting to me. And then how to give the feedback as well, I like to do is once per month, write an email to each person on my caseload. Hey, here's a summary of my supervision with you. Here are the things you did well, and pick the top two or three things that they did well. And then here's areas of improvement, which is like the top two or three things that they need to work on. And send that to them in an email. Avoid the sandwich method. We know that doesn't work. And just
does
that
it not
way.
Work?
I've learned in my OBM class to not use the sandwich method because it can dilute the message and it can leave the person confusing and can leave the positive message less impactful. That's what I was taught. But you know what, though? It's been a few years.
I'm open to that. I'm going to have to think about that one. I always did the sandwich method. No, actually, I always start with something positive and end it with something like more whatever. That's not sandwiched because that's not sandwiched.
The sandwich is like positive, negative, back, positive.
So you say positive, then the negative?
Well, it's not negative, just areas of improvement. Yes.
Same thing.
and then hi, and my email, of course, is like, if you have any questions or concerns, please let me know. And then in my supervision in person or telehealth, I like to say, do you have any feedback for me? Is there anything I did that you did not like that you want me to do differently? Is there anything I did with the client that I could improve on? Because I'm rusty sometimes with my skills. I was doing telehealth during COVID. And then after COVID ended, I'm like, I'm going to go back in clinic to see if I still have the skills. And guess what? I did not. I saw a client just run past me and I'm like, huh, I should have stopped that client.
That is so funny.
So wow. I can always improve. And so I like to model to the RBTs and my student analysts how to accept feedback myself. And, you know, that way they can always improve themselves.
I love that. Wow. I actually learned something very new because I thought the sandwich method was accepted across the board. Apparently it's not. And I do hear it. I do hear it. I don't think I ever really used the sandwich method. I was a teacher once, so then I definitely did. But now I don't think I use it so much without realizing it, even though like in my head I thought I did. I like that you pointed that out. But, like, I'm like taking that in right now. Is there anything else? Because there's so much that you said that I think everyone's just going to eat it up. Is there anything that you specifically want to leave the listeners off with? Any message?
I guess it's just all at the end of the day, we were all student analysts at one point. We were maybe BTs or RBTs. We have a lot busy lives now, and they have busy lives too. Having that compassion and understanding of what they're going through and just providing them the help that they need, the compassion, the empathy, and giving them the support that you would have liked if you were in their shoes.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much, Marissa Lynn. This was really amazing to talk to you, to hear about your perspective. I gained so much. I'm sure everyone else will also. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.